Coming up, that Brooklyn Nets media day that yielded so much quality conversation between the players and the reporters asking questions has us back in, taking a look at Kyrie Irving as once again, let's reset those narratives. Let's reset those timelines. Let's reset the good vibes. Coming up next.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ah, yes, friends. Welcome into the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. Over there, you're going to find Doug Norrie, owner-operator of DFSR, for all your daily fantasy sports rankings from DraftKings to FanDuel. He's got you covered. I'm Adam Arbrick, breaking down the New York Football Giants on the One Giant podcast with my boy Andy Mack. We thank you for making us the first listen of the day free on all those great platforms. And Doug, before we dive in, do you feel like you are, I am, we are resetting the timeline as we enter the season as a Brooklyn Nets podcast?
Like in terms of how we approach the team?
A lot of people don't know this, but you and I had a lot of internal strife. At one point, I demanded a trade request. Someone on the network said that's not how these things work. You're just employed. You can leave if you want to. I kind of walked it back. You and I had a whole thing. It was a whole powwow. We did a whole thing.
I was going to be locked on wherever Kevin Durant went. Something
like that. Locked on KD. That was going to be the new brand.
We're kidding. We're here through thick and thin.
Thick and thin as it can be, Kyrie Irving in the media day, things are looking thin, as in good, as in saying, just like with Kevin Durant, you want to reset how things feel coming into this new season. The last 2 years, last year specifically, when it comes to Kyrie Irving, was as tumultuous as it could possibly be from a NBA team and player perspective and personally. So he gets up to the podium, and just like with Kevin Durant, let's go ahead and clean the slate. And as he jokingly said to kind of kick things off, we want to run the timeline. We can run the timeline. And in some ways, we don't need to because we all know it and we've talked about it. This is about what did happen in this offseason as it pertained to Kevin Durant, the trade request, and the negotiations for Kyrie on the extension. Those are the most pertinent, I think, pieces of information that we want to get to before we talk about how Kyrie looks at the season ahead.
Yeah, I thought Kyrie was really honest. I mean, that's never been a problem of his, just speaking honestly. Sometimes it's gotten him, coming on the wrong side of other people's opinions. But for the most part, when presented, especially in front of the media, he's really a never standoffish with the media when he's face-to-face with them. He's often standoffish with them on social media apps and other stuff like that. But when, face-to-face with folks answering questions, he's always been very forthcoming, I've thought, and honest and kind of like a sometimes a breath of fresh air, even if some of the other stuff he does and says can kind of make you, roll your eyes or, at least wonder what's going on. But in terms of this media day, I thought he did what he had to do, walked up there, stared down, some probably not great questions that in terms of what he would want to answer, was very honest about his feelings about how some of these things went down and how it felt for him personally and emotionally and all this stuff, which we'll get to. But in general, I didn't expect him to be standoffish because he's really not, like, if you've ever watched any of his press conferences, he's just really almost never like that. It's like the other stuff comes through in odd hours when he has a mind to say, to drop something or say something.
A little bit of free time, don't mind.
Yeah, but in situations like this, he's always been really forthcoming. I mean, honestly, as forthcoming as any athlete out there. So this was more of that, and it was, as we'll get to here, kind of what you wanted to hear if you're a Nets fan that is hoping that some of the same stuff that's happened in the past won't happen again. Like there's never any promises around this stuff, but as we talked with Kevin Durant, if you're hoping to get off on the right foot here, the Kyrie interview media day portion of it was as good as you could hope for.
Yeah. Starting off just quickly with, as when he got in front of the media, he said, this is totally different. Not me on a Zoom call. Right. And that's from interacting with the media. But also then he said, I get to be here with my teammates. I get to be here with the organization that I chose to come to and want to represent. So I'm going to encapsulate all of that those kind of elements into this underneath that big bubble of, we know about the mandate. We know what it cost him. He reiterated he was making a personal choice that he knew was going to impact things professionally, but didn't realize to the extent that it was going to. I'm comfortable leaving that there. You can feel free to add on to that if we want to. The first and most interesting point to me was talking about the timeline leading into the offseason and the Kevin Durant circumstances and the negotiations for Kyrie with the Nets was being embarrassed to walk off the court being swept by the Boston Celtics. We always talk about everything that doesn't have to do with the games. That was one of the first points that he made that did kind of resonate with me in a very positive way. Just like when Kevin Durant was speaking about it, you don't want the sense that Kyrie Irving, even with everything that went on last year, was okay to kind of go out there and go through the motions and say, we're thinking about next year. Kyrie Irving, when he's on the court, plays an extremely high level. He succeeds at a high level. So it was good to hear that there's some level of frustration around everything that occurred that meant I couldn't have continuity. And then I get out there and we just kind of get our butts kicked. That's something that we can fix, that we can come back from coming into this season.
Yeah, he talks about leaving the court. You mentioned the word embarrassed, which is how he started off. It's clear that between what KD and Kyrie said, that series stuck with them, right? Like watching the rest of the playoffs, which they do, and knowing that they just got basically embarrassed by the Celtics. Like they didn't win a game, and for whatever problems with the team was, they didn't really put it on anybody else but themselves. And they just said, like, that's kind of just an unacceptable outcome, which it is when you have these two guys on the team. So in terms of what you wanted to hear from him on that standpoint, you could have easily been blasé about it all. It's just one season, because there's a million excuses. You could have said, and they talked a little bit about this, but how that there was inconsistency with just the continuity on the team and things that just that they needed more time together. And that was another problem too. He wasn't usually using it as an excuse. I think he was just saying that just was what it was, right? That we just didn't have enough time together. And that's what it was. And it was still just a not great outcome for them. So yeah, and I'm with you. When both of them talked about it like that, I think it's, you can, it's good. It's easy to craft points ahead of time with a media thing because you kind of know most of the questions that are coming. I think in this case, I do believe that this probably did stick with them. Like a series like that, when you're this competitive of like an athlete or just whatever, getting beat like that like does sting. Like there's just no matter who you are, but it's clear that they sat with both of them.
And I'll tie it into a way that doesn't make it necessarily about the Brooklyn Nets. In the way that Kevin Durant referenced it, it was, you know, his work habits in the offseason, what he wants to achieve, where he thinks his game is. That it's fine for it to be solely about, as individual talents in the NBA, they were embarrassed by that, regardless of it being with the Brooklyn Nets or about the team. Then there's all the organizational stuff, but like that because you can then compartmentalize it to your point. We're disappointed. The organization, we wanted to achieve things. It's okay if you're individually embarrassed by that, because that's something that you can carry with you and doesn't need to be just a talking point. That is, when I step on the court, I think I'm better than everybody else, and I wasn't. Like, that's all there is to it. I wasn't better than the guy across from me for the Boston Celtics. And Kyrie even dismissed, it wasn't about the relationship and coming from Boston or any of those narratives. It wasn't about the big narratives. It was the individual narrative of just where I was coming from, getting on the court, and not having success.
And look, the NBA is a fraternity. These guys are, a lot of them are friends, whether they played together or not. Like they've, you know, their paths have crossed at multiple times and multiple places over the years. And there is, you know, an understanding within that community. Like you have to go face your peers too, and they all know what happened to you. You know what I mean? Yeah. So even if these guys aren't paying lip service to the fans, which I actually don't think they care much about, which is fine, by the way. Like you don't need to embrace the fans. I think they're fine with fans. I don't think that really drives them in any real way. But if you're being driven among your peers or your legacy or things like that, which these guys are driven by, it'll still hurt. Like, so no matter what the motivation is, and we'll talk in a minute about like some of the other things that Kyrie had to say, wherever the motivation lies, I think, you know, coming into the season, there is a sense, and we got this from these two guys and to some degree Simmons as well, that there is something to prove here. And I know they said, no, we don't have to prove anything. I don't mean that. There was a reference to not having to prove things to the fans. I agree with them on that one. But professionally, there's no way. They have to compete at this level, to have this kind of talent, this stuff sticks with those guys. I think sometimes people want it to be like the fans that these guys are playing for. I don't want to break the news to you. It's not, right? But it's okay. It doesn't matter because I think there's just other motivation. Not to say it's a zero, but
to your point, it's like we saw everyone had these media days, bulk of the teams. LeBron James Does he want to represent the Lakers well? Of course he does. But what is motivating LeBron James? It's about getting older and still viewing himself as the best player, one of the best players in the league. That's what I'm doing here. That's what Kevin Durant is doing. It's what Kyrie's doing. It's what every player is doing first and foremost. To your point, when you get love from the fans and they're celebrating great games, like, of course, that relationship matters and you like it. But now more than ever in sports, there's been a clear ability to kind of take a look at the landscape of things of, how do fans treat you all the time, right? Are the fans always in your corner, or do they, depending on the success of the team, start to maybe sway in one direction or the other? So you're always going to be motivated by yourself, and that little point that you made there as well, motivated about how your peers are looking at you and maybe some of these younger players nipping at the heels of you as you get older, where you want to say, okay, been a weird couple of seasons. Guess what? I'm ready to reassert where I am in this hierarchy.
All right, we got a bunch of other things. We're going to talk about what Kyrie said about his relationship with Durant and kind of how that went down with Durant's trade request. We're going to talk about just kind of what's motivating Kyrie at this point and just how he felt about maybe not as many teams out there that were looking for his services as he might have thought first. We're going to talk to you about our friends over at betonline.net, your number one source for football betting info this season. You can find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, in-depth articles. You can figure out how the Giants were not able to beat the Dallas Cowboys last night. It's all there for you on Bet Online, your continued source for sports wagering information, live betting, up-to-minute scores for every sport out there. They got the NBA lines already sitting there at Bet Online, so go check that out. Head on over to betonline.net. You can learn more, use that mobile device, sign up today. Bet Online, where the game starts.
So as you mentioned there, more than enough to have to continue to cover here in a very positive way. One of the things that Kyrie Irving, we've talked about this before, and as you said, he's never shy from being open and honest. He spoke a lot about, and I'm going to use the term that he mentioned there just because I think this is, it encapsulates the way his perspective is. He said he wanted to honor what Kevin Durant was going through in the offseason. He wanted to honor himself and what he was experiencing. He said that he wanted to honor the questions that reporters were asking, the job that they need to do. I think that sometimes, when depending on how you look at verbiage, that can strike a certain way. I think that that is genuine in how Kyrie Irving thinks and speaks on these different angles of it. And inside of that is where you got that first insight about where he acknowledged, as he has before, I'm not perfect in terms of the way that I handle relationships. And as you got into this offseason, and we can touch on the negotiations between him and the Nets specifically, all of a sudden you get there and they come to that part of, where were you when Kevin Durant requests that trade? What was it feeling like? And he essentially said, I'm sitting at home on my couch. And he goes, awkward.
Yeah,
it was awkward because I didn't know it. And it reiterates the point that Kevin Durant made. It's separate negotiations. And I fully believe that these guys may talk about wanting to play together or not, or the frustrations. But when you talk about negotiating dollars, there's no way that they're getting into one another's pockets or trying to do it on each other's behalf. So I do think that Kyrie legitimately was like, oh, what's going to happen here? And what could it mean for me having opted in this short-term opportunity?
Yeah. The word awkward was, it kind of stood out as just a very accurate encapsulation, encapsulation of how he was feeling. He did call Kevin Durant his best friend during media day, but also admitted that, like, when something like that happens and you did not know about it, it was awkward. And I think it probably did call into question sort of what he felt like his path forward was too. And there's probably a feeling of, I'm putting words in his mouth here a little bit, but a feeling of like, hey, what's going to happen to me here? Right. And which then, you know, proceed to have him go out and explore other options, which we'll talk about here in a second. But it does give you an insight into, I know people often want to, again, equate their own life to NBA athletes and be like, hey, I would never do this without telling my best friend. It's like, that's just not how it works with these guys, man. Like, they just have their cohorts. They have their groups. They are very individual dudes. They are looking out for themselves, as they should. And you're not always going to run things by, like, a teammate even, or a friend, when you're just going to make a decision like that. It's just not how it works.
Real quick on that too, because I think you bring that up a lot of times on the show, justifiably. Like, it is true. It's a far different compartmentalization than, as you always say, your buddies out at the bar. And also, I think there is a, like, people make personal decisions for themselves, right? Sure. Like, we can apply it to kind of, it is kind of a universal truth. Yeah, you want to take into account how it's going to impact other individuals and what's going to be best for them and for you. And at the end of the day, you have to be able to wake up in the morning and go, this is the choice I made. And if it was predicated on somebody else and, you know, what you think's going to happen and how they're going to come back to the table with you or for you, et cetera, that's how you end up leaving yourself open to being frustrated, disappointed, or disenfranchised about what's going to happen going forward. So in that moment where Kyrie, again, he ends up opting in on the 1 year, they discussed the negotiation coverage and what that looked like. And I will touch on, I'm not glossing over the idea of the vaccine and the mandate and how it impacted, because Kyrie referenced it. I don't want to get this wrong. He didn't appreciate how being unvaccinated became a stigma. And I think that there are fair aspects to this in saying you can examine what that meant and how, and the choice you think he should have made professionally, the choice he made personally, and the responsibilities that come with that. I think we can all agree that once that became his choice, the party lines in which things got divided on became personally negative in a way that I don't think is ever justifiable or fair. You can examine it from a basketball standpoint, and I get why that would be difficult for him. And ultimately, it obviously played a factor in saying, okay, let's just set the bar here with the opt-in for 1 year, and we'll see where that goes. And then the trade request tumbles, and everything starts to get really murky here in the offseason.
Yeah, and so, and I'm totally with you. Like, he did speak about the vax stuff, and I was able to hear that. We have been around this road so many times, I'm not going to go down it again, but
I want to make sure we didn't skip over it, but yes.
Yeah. But like, he's, and I think that he said, and he also said that he felt like he was given something like an ultimatum, about whether he could play or not. And, you know, I don't think it was a direct ultimatum, but it basically was, I mean, it was an ultimatum because he didn't get to play. So it was like, if he had gotten vaxxed, he would have played. And if he didn't, he didn't play. So that is just an ultimatum, whether it was expressly stated or not. And so just for him to cover that piece, but he also just talked about how difficult that was, right? Like, that was a really hard time for him, because he just wasn't sure if he was going to ever be back with the team. He wasn't sure how it was going to affect his career. Like, there was some real high level concerns, I think, that he let on about, and he has let on about in the past, that, you know, he still stuck to what he wanted to do, but it wasn't without strife, obviously. Yeah. And you know, if you think back on it, that didn't ever even have clear timelines around it. Like, that was kind of a forever thing for a little bit, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. But, you know, for him to mention that, and I think, I mean, he didn't walk back any decision-making part of it, but it does let you on about the human being side of it, where it's like, hey, this stigma, as he phrased it, was something he had to carry around with him for making a decision that I don't think he saw as, like, totally unreasonable.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, you're making a choice, and regardless of how you view it from the outside, it's just that it doesn't matter. It exists now. And the impact, whatever the outcome is going to be, I have that now. The organization has that now. The fan base has that now. And everyone has to kind of come to grips with whatever that may look like. Then the other piece coming off of that was following the idea of, well, we got this trade request coming. And this kind of happened. The timeline kind of overlaps one another here. He opts in on the 1 year. There seems to be some sense that maybe if you want to go to market, you could look and see what that landscape is going to be for you. And we'll come up here in a second and break down what that landscape looked like. And I think, again, some more honest responses from Kyrie Irving on that front. Okay, so as we mentioned, some things happen simultaneously for the Brooklyn Nets, or everything happens simultaneously. And just to tie it in as well, remember, when Kyrie Irving finally comes back onto the court, something that was occurring in and around all of this was the trade of James Harden with the Philadelphia 76ers, and Ben Simmons coming in, and Seth Curry, and what that's going to look like, and is he going to be healthy? So there's 1,000 other narratives happening at the same time. But once it became obvious that the extension was not going to happen, the murmurs out there start that maybe, hey, if you think you can go find a trade, go ahead and look and get it. And Kyrie honestly said, wasn't as many suitors as I maybe thought. Not there was, and for a number of reasons. Who could afford to take him on potentially? The speculation around maybe I'll just go next year in the offseason and take a vet minimum to get the ball rolling here. But I think that was also the reality check of where his status currently stood in the landscape of the NBA.
Yeah, his exact quote were when he was asked about whether he would have considered going to another team, right, and opting out. He said there were options, but not many, I'll tell you that. And he kind of laughed at that point. But he said, because, again, the stigma of whether or not I want to play, whether or not I'm going to be committed to the team, which I thought was really unfair at times, but also the timing was ideal to be able to put that on me because I wasn't available. So he wraps that back in there, but he admits it, like, hey, there weren't a ton of people calling, right? Like when it was readily available information that I was available to be on other teams, he doesn't sound like he fielded a lot of offers. And I think that's an interesting thing to admit.
And there's something I think fascinating to it, just in terms of the NBA landscape, of saying, okay, he's available. And we talked about it at the time where I said, is there no team that maybe would take this little, you know, half year flyer on him when he was unable to play in New York, but would have been able to play somewhere else and then figure it out later? Or wouldn't a team want to X? I do find it interesting. If we didn't have this past year occur, we still know what the talent is of Kyrie Irving. But remember, even pre that, it's about going from Cleveland to Boston, about leaving from Boston and coming to Brooklyn. And then, which is not on him either, also the injury kind of little tag that follows him around a little bit too. I think that a lot of people when we hear people talk about him, they reference Kyrie Irving like he is also going to be 34 years old, like Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving is 30. Like Kyrie Irving is in the sweet spot of his prime, which even makes losing out time this past season more difficult to swallow from every angle. But do you think that the league-wide, this perception is also, where is the value of a Kyrie Irving? And I'll extend it to, where is the value of a high-level point guard or a high-level off guard, whichever you're going to put him in, relative to where the league is and what teams need to be ultimately successful? Length, size, versatility.
Well, I understand. I mean, I'll get to that in one second. I understand why there wasn't there wouldn't have been a lot of suitors. The timing, like just like the Durant trade was weird. And you know, and just these guys fit such small boxes of like what teams are going to want to bring them in for, you know, a reasonable amount of money. So I get why there wouldn't have been many teams calling at that point. Right. Yeah. Like that is just kind of obvious. We kind of knew that. Like we knew the list of teams that would maybe even consider it was already pretty short, just like the teams that would consider unloading the full bag for Durant was pretty short. Like this is really unique circumstances. I do think that the league wide, he has some kind of like repairing to do not his attitude, but his reputation to do around his reputation. I think he understands that too. He kind of admitted it in this media day. It was like, this stuff went along with me, whether that's fair or not. I think he sees it on him to be able to like to actually cure some of this stuff for himself, mm-hmm. because at this point it just is what it is, whether he likes it or not. Like that is the talking point around him. And I actually think he understands that. He actually didn't really push back on that too much in this. He admitted that it was a problem, but it wasn't like he was crying about how unfair it was. I think he just saw it for what it is. You know, you mentioned his prime. It's really easy to forget this. 2 years ago, this guy was 13 all NBA. Like he was amazing 2 seasons ago. I know we had this last season in between us where he didn't play. The skill wise, there's not really much of an argument. Again, voted by the media, like, and its peers, he was all NBA 2 years ago. So it's and because of the way it worked out, he put no miles on himself last year. So like
fresh as can be
that. But if you think about it, I think from like what you're saying, think about it that way. That is completely forgotten. That is no one is talking about that. Like, but he was a 50-40-90 guy 1 season ago.
Right? And this is when we talk about the rankings and these lists and everything else. This is true of everybody in the NBA. Not just it happens to be that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are inside of that pocket right now. It is the recency bias is real. When a young player looks like a stud and where there's a surprising surge for a team in the playoffs that you don't expect, you start to put more weight on what they can be and what they can do. And I think, listen, every player eventually starts to take a little bit of a step back, starts to see a little bit of a drop off in their play. But by and large, something that you've always, I think you always speak to on the show is it's like, trust the stats, like trust the history on a lot of these guys, trust the numbers. Dudes that play at an elite level for a decade don't typically become a bum in year 11 or year 12. There will be the fall off, but there are guys that can be flashes for a season or two. There are players like, I'm not even knocking him, Donovan Mitchell is a guy that comes on as X and now I think has been compartmentalized into a very different type of player and a type of talent that you start to, you know, you think, what does he mean if you add him to this group? What does it mean if you put him onto an island by himself? There are tiers and levels to this. And not to get too far afield from Media Day, which I think ended on a very positive note for Kyrie in general, that matters when we talk about where these players are, not just the skill sets, the talent level. It's about what they've proven to be capable of. And Kyrie is obviously one of those guys. Again, by and large, I thought this Media Day was very positive about him wanting to be here, be a part of it, and have this be good. Have this be good for one season, have there be nothing else. And that point that you mentioned about, he controls where the narrative goes for himself from here now. And I think that that's a positive thing for the Nets and a positive thing for Kyrie Irving.
I don't know how much, media day like this is akin to those like open gym videos that you see from players. It's like, look who's working on their three-pointer this year. Like, look who's insane shape, when there's just nobody in the gym. And there's not, you know, there's no pressure against you or whatever.
Sure. Talk is cheap, you could say.
But I know I often fall a little bit for those. And I'm wondering if I fell a little hard for like the Durant and Kyrie thing here, because like in my mind, I mean, I'm not going to go crazy on this. And I've been fooled here with these guys in the past, but specifically Kyrie. But like when I left that meeting today, I'm like, he's going to play the whole season. Like short of an injury. But the only reason I say that, though, and look, I get it. Like, we've been down this road a bunch, and there's been a ton of different reasons, and it's always an isolated incident, and there's just too many incidents. But I did get the sense that, like, there was some part of him that at least saw how his standing in the NBA has fallen, what he probably needs to do to reclaim where he was not too long ago, or just, like, in the overall discussion around, like, how good players are. Because he's definitely fallen. Like, we went through all the lists and stuff. Like, he's fallen among this group, and he fell just in terms of how many teams want him in the offseason. Like, he saw the dollars fall too, right? Like, the dollars just were not available for him this offseason. He's headed into a contract season, he is in a contract season now. He's going to be a free agent. If there was a time for this guy to just not have anything happen and if like something was going to happen to like move past it, because he's like, I just can't let anything happen this year. Like, this is the season. Is the season going into it.
I will say, because,
and I know I probably sound crazy. Like, I'm like, oh, Ben Simmons hit a three. He hit a three in the open gym. He's going to take 50 threes this year. No, I get it. Like, this kind of thing happens.
Well, just wait until De'Ron Sharp's hitting mid-range jumpers, and wait until you hear me on the podcast, friends. No, but just a few episodes ago, when we were talking about where would it be and what would I want, I said, you know, I was like, if I could just not have to have these discussions around Kyrie and what it's going to be, whatever, like, I would just as soon not do it anymore. And then I watched the press, and then I watched Media Day. Yeah. And I got that old-fashioned feeling where anything's possible. I think you're right. Like, it does, like, because you know why, though, too? You're right. And you said this yesterday with Kevin Durant. You can't always, like, win the media day, but you can certainly lose them, right? And I think that they both won it. But you could lose a media day. You could have come out being Kyrie Irving and just been like, hey, listen, man, I think you all gave me a bunch of crap. I didn't really love it. It was I made personal choices, whatever. I'm getting dragged for 2 years now, because it's not even just about this past season. It's about, I've been getting dragged for the last 5 years of my career. Ever since I said I wanted to leave Cleveland and have my own team, I've been a target. And we all know that he doesn't help his cause with that. But I do think that you come in with the best possible version of it. It'll be fascinating really to see whether it's the Brooklyn Nets. I think if this season goes one way and he plays a ton of games and it all looks good, the Nets are going to be willing to probably pay him. I would be very fascinated to see, though, if he went to market, where do teams really look at him? Because I don't know if one really, you know, bounce back season for him on the court and off the court is going to change or alleviate concerns that other teams would have. To your point.
Oh, I think it will.
But to your point, though, he's no more motivated than he is in this moment to do everything the right way, right? And I guess the question will come down to what teams will look at it and say it's worth the 4-year max dollars to maybe capture, you know, a championship or whatever. And guess what? If he has that type of year that we're painting the picture of, I think the Brooklyn Nets should be the first team to say it's worth the 4 years max dollars. So don't discount what I think the Brooklyn Nets should do off of a season like that. I'm I'm as optimistic as I've ever been. And what a beautiful process we've gone through here over the last couple of years to be in that place.
Fooled again.
Classic. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on. Well, you know what? Screw it. Fool me again. I don't care. I'll go. I'll come right back in for it. Two scoops? No, 20 scoops.
You can shame me all you want. I'll keep getting fooled. All right. We're going to be back tomorrow. We'll talk about Ben Simmons, yep. Media Day, another fascinating one. We'll catch up on that. In the meantime, make sure you subscribe over on YouTube. Thanks for everyone that's left all the comments on YouTube. We've seen the numbers just continue to climb even faster now than before. So it's the easiest way to help the podcast. It's totally free to you. Like and subscribe over on YouTube. Like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, friends are the ones on who you can depend. He's my friend. He's not my friend. Friends are the ones who are there in the end. He's my friend. They're not my friends. Friends. La, 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 la. Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, there we go.
Flight of the Conchords.
I forgot their
name. No, Doug, the Flight of the Conchords.
I got there. Well, the great American poets. We'll be back again. Actually, not American, Australian. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more. Oh, New Zealand. Ah, screwing everything up here at the end. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.